correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamers roll. www.d20radio.com.
Welcome to Don't Despair, a podcast dedicated to the Genesis role-playing game published by Fantasy Flight Games. Each episode, we take a deep dive into higher-level concepts of Genesis to help players and game masters get the most out of their games. Hey everyone, I'm Scott Zumwalt, but you may know me as Drainsmith. I've created a lot of game aids like character sheets and GM screens that some people have told me that they found really useful. I'm also an admin and moderator of the Facebook group, Discord server, and the subreddit. I've got a few friends here with me that are also part of running the Genesis community. Each episode, we hope to use our collective knowledge and wisdom of Genesis to make your lives running and playing Genesis as awesome as it can be. Bit of a disclaimer before we get started. This is advice we provide based on our own collective experience and the feedback that we receive from our playing groups. While we are obviously trying to recommend things based on this experience, we aren't telling you how your game should be run. There are aspects of how we deliver this advice that should be received with an awareness of that bias. In the end, fun is the goal, and rules and story work together to generate that fun. If you and other players are entertained and encouraged to continue using Genesis, then you have succeeded. And by extension, so have we. Let's start by introducing everyone. If you're active on the Discord server, you should have seen all of these people toss out an answer to a question every once in a while. So in no particular order, Rob Alexander, who are you and why would anyone care what you have to say?
I am Rob Alexander, as you said. Go by Eowarian on the Discord, the subreddit, I don't think I do, and I admin both on the Discord and Facebook. I've got just about 20 years of gaming under my belt and 2 years of GMing Genesis under my belt. So I've done things, I kind of know the systems, and I hopefully loosely know what I'm doing.
Awesome, thank you. Next up, Guillaume Tardif.
Is that right? Okay. Yeah, sure, that's right.
Our resident French-Canadian. What the hell makes you so damn special?
Well, I've been playing RPG games since about like the last 20 years, and I've been digging into game mastery most of the time. Actually, I didn't have much time to be an actual player, so I've been like cursed with the always GM thing, and I've been GMing Pathfinder for a while, but then I switched to the narrative dice system with Star Wars, for which I GM for about like 2 years, and then I opted into Genesis because I wanted to play something else with the same system, so I wanted to do Genesis, and I focused on my Inquisition campaign setting. And maybe some people also have seen my card template that I shared a while back on the Discord server and Facebook group for adversaries, mostly items and whatever else. And I think I also shared a lot of actual setting covers, mostly for the fun of it, because they didn't add any content behind the actual picture. And of course, I've been active on Discord to provide answers on many questions.
Matt Mensch, besides being a professional curmudgeon, what do you bring to the table?
So other than being a professional curmudgeon, I've been playing games since Carter was president of the United States. I've played a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of everything, or so I'd like to think. But that's not entirely true. I did fall in love with the narrative dice system with Star Wars when that beta came out for Edge of the Empire. And from then, everything that I've tried to play, I've always tried to drag it back into that system. And imagine my surprise when Genesis came out and it allowed me to not only do that, but to take the rules and go wherever my mind would want to take me.
Anastasia Steele, convince our listeners to not turn this off right now and regale them with how your particular insights will blow their minds.
I've been running and writing homebrew settings for a variety of things for about 5 years now. I'm probably the youngest person on this recording. And I love world building. I love setting creation and Genesis is probably the system that has allowed me like the most freedom and the correct balance of crunch and narrative. Like, I love the narrative dice system and the amount of freedom it provides. So some of you might know me from that steampunk setting that I've been writing for the past few months and talking about on the server. And some might know me because I have a really weird name.
What is the name of your setting?
Oh, my setting is called Sunfall.
All right, lastly, we have Zach Gaskins. Who let you in here?
I've also been in the role-playing hobby for at least 20, 25 years. And most of that experience has been with Dungeons & Dragons. And I'm more of a, I come from a more of a board gaming tradition, but I'm very healthy enthusiast of role-playing games. And in particular, as an organizer of events, I am the senior director of tabletop gaming for a convention called MomoCon in Atlanta. So I have seen all sorts of people come into the hobby from all walks of life and seeing just how much it's grown over the past decade is really encouraging. With regards to Genesis, same as everyone else, when the Star Wars system came out and I played it a couple times, I saw the real potential for it. And already being a huge fan of the Android universe that Dan Clark and Kevin Wilson started, I was just hoping beyond hope that they would implement an RPG for that universe. And since they already had the narrative dice system, I figured that would be a good hit, a good fit. And lo and behold, one day Genesis was announced and my prayers were answered.
Boy, were they. Love that book. One more disclaimer before we get started. Our podcast is going to be basically PG, which means you're going to hear a couple damns, a couple hells, maybe a heck every once in a while. Basically, if it was on Star Trek The Next Generation, it's going to be pretty okay here. So you're not going to really get an S-bomb until our first movie. So in this episode, our inaugural episode, we are starting from the beginning. We're going to talk about Session Zero. Scott, what the hell is Session Zero? So glad you asked that. Session Zero is where you manage to actually get a group of people interested in playing an RPG. You all meet with character sheets and dice in hand, ready to play, but you actually don't do any playing. Before you play, everyone in the game needs to agree what the game is. And I mean more than just Genesis and what the setting is. You need to know the tone, the style. Is this going to be a murder hobo fest or strictly focused on social interactions? This is where the GM lays out the vague idea of what they want to do and the players say what they're expecting. How was that, everyone? Is that a good primer?
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, pretty good. Straightforward.
All right. So, Rob, we're going to start with you. When okay. you do a session zero, what is something that you start with?
Usually, if I'm GMing, I like to let the players know the basic theme of the story I would like to tell. I do leave it kind of vague because I want their input. I want to know what aspects they would like to enjoy. Like, I may just say, oh, we might run in the Fallout universe or some homebrew Cowboys and Cthulhu setting I did for a while, and then have them give me input where they would like to see that go, as well as my own ideas of what I would like to throw at them so that we can all kind of get on the same page and make sure it's going to be an experience that everyone wants to participate in.
Guillaume, how about you? What is something that you definitely make sure that you do, you know, when you're doing a session zero?
Well, one thing I do is that I ask my player if they want something more open sandbox or something more railroading, because sometimes they just want to have a quest that is like really defined and which I put hours into preparing, and like it's something big with an deep intrigue, like with politics or whatever, and like I don't know, prophecy or some kind of complex quest. Or sometimes when we're just trying to actually like play with the system or play with the world, they're just like, okay, we are bunch of adventurers, and we don't exactly know where we're going with this. Like, we don't know if we like to go like the saving the world type, or just like wandering between villages or settlements and see is there's any job here, what do we want to do, so like that kind of thing. Because some players are have the imagination to actually come up with their own motivations and quests, like, oh, you know what, I want to do something like this, so why don't we just like form a thief guild or whatever. And other players lack that kind of not creativity, but kind of initiative, so they need to be railroaded, like, okay, you are summoned by the king or whatever, and they're giving you a quest and you basically have to do this. So it depending on the kind of player you have, some may prefer one way or the other way.
Yeah, so you'll just start with the general, do you want me to make a bunch of stuff up, or are you guys going to run it?
Yeah, exactly.
Anastasia, what about you? How do you, what was the first thing you do with your session zero?
I give my players the elevator pitch for what I want to run, kind of like Rob said, giving them the basic themes and idea of the setting. And like Guillaume, I also prefer to like kind of gauge what my, like, where my players' strengths lie, because some groups really enjoy like really heavy crunchy combat, some groups really enjoy role playing, and it really helps when you're meeting them in person often for the first time, because a lot of games are like either scheduled or organized online, to kind of, you know, get a feel for what you're for what the people want and what you want out of a given game. Another thing I like to address is I want to see whether any of my players have actually used Genesis specifically before, and try to kind of explain to them how it's different from, like, for example, Pathfinder and Dungeons and Dragons, or more story-oriented games like the Powered by the Apocalypse system that people like to be using for their hacks and homebrews.
Matt, what about you? What do you start with your session zero?
Well, I'm going to take a page from the Book of Sam and say that it depends.
Wow.
Classical answer.
Yeah. So a lot of times we didn't do a session zero in the past. You would show up with a character and you would take whatever story that the dungeon master or game master or whatever was bringing to the table. So when I do it now, I take into account who's sitting with me. Is it, you know, the guys that have been playing with for 30 years, we sit down, the GM says, hey, I want to run a story that does this, make a character for it. And so we do that. If it's new people that I'm introducing, we sit down and we talk about the mechanics a little bit. And we talk about, you know, what's the story. I mean, I've had some people that have never played a role-playing game before. So we go over that kind of stuff too.
Yeah, the Session Zero, I feel, is kind of a new concept. It's making its way into more RPGs.
It definitely brings a value that some of the older style of GMing, maybe in a more collaborative storytelling, like with Genesis or Star Wars, that you didn't get when it's a little more of that old DM versus player mentality that like the old D20 systems kind of fostered.
Yeah, to add on to what Rob is saying, there's two aspects of how the hobby has kind of evolved over the past couple of decades. One, as he was saying, is that the concept of dungeon master or game master has transitioned away from being opponent and referee to referee, but also a fellow player with special duties. So that becomes more of a group experience and not an oppositional experience. You know, and some people like that and some people don't, but Genesis in particular definitely wants to foster that collaborative storytelling experience that just happens to use dice and also happens to have a decent amount of crunch to let people hook in with their math brains.
I think that's a good point, as the session zero is an opportunity to tell your players that you don't intend, or maybe do intend, to have that antagonistic relationship with them, that this is a collaborative storytelling experience. I want everyone involved. I'm just here to guide the story in a specific way. I have some elements that I want to show to you. You may interact with them however you choose.
Another fun thing to do with that is also allowing them to bring in their own elements. I know my favorite character that I've ever played, I was player at the time during Star Wars, we had a session zero where the whole time we talked what we wanted to do. We kind of planned character interrelationships a little so that it would drive the story forward early on. But our GM set up a bunch of Google forms and docs where we could just submit NPCs we wanted to see, or maybe a story arc that tied into our character, or just these little threads that he could pull on and locations that we would have liked to see. So he had stuff he could draw from just out of a hat, but we also got to have input that would sometimes come up much later, and you may even have forgot that you gave that input.
That's wonderful. I love that.
It's really good.
Yeah, the more the players feel like their contributions are actively adding to everything rather than just interacting with something that is prefabricated, the more they'll feel like that they'll be invested, and they won't feel like that they're being made to act in someone else's play. It's their play instead.
Yeah. There's an interesting bit there. You know, a lot of people take great pains to make a background for their character. And I think that this is the time for the GM to take those and meld those into their story. And if a GM is coming with an idea of how the story is going to run from start to finish and not using those backgrounds, they might be doing a disservice to the players. But that's something you talk about.
I think one of the things that should be discussed during a session zero is the degree to which the characters are familiar with each other. It kind of ties in with what Matt said about the background, is that, and an earlier comment about how some parties really like to plan out their interrelationships. What I really like doing is I like making all of my players have some kind of secret that ties into the greater story arc, but that other party members are not aware of. Creates for some good like friction and intrigue. Of course, it's something that can only be implemented with some parties that are okay with that kind of thing. But I've found it to be like a really good thing that often pushes the story forward.
Do you like in terms of consent? Do you get your do your players have secret information that they get? That way, even the players, other players at the table, don't know what they know and have to find out.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
And I will say it's a little obvious you do enjoy that sort of thing with your drama tables and things that you have worked on with Sunfall.
I have a D100 drama table. It's really good.
Yeah, that whole answer was not surprising at all. Okay, Zach, where do you start with your session zero? What's the first thing that you make sure is done in that?
I think one of the first things that I do is I make sure that if the players themselves don't know each other, that they introduce themselves. You know, because sometimes you'll be running a game with people who already know each other, like good friends, and they just want to get into this new thing that I've offered to run for them. But even there, sometimes friends have very controlled socialization with each other on purpose. Some people call this measured doses. So sometimes when you bring people together in ways that they are not used to, it can sometimes change the dynamic of their relationship. And that's something that you have to make sure everyone buys into. Because in many ways, role-playing as an activity is a very intimate one. It encourages people to act out and encourages them to improv. It makes them vulnerable, and not everyone has the same comfort level with that. So that's something that you want to kind of establish a baseline amongst everyone. Even if they're all good friends, they may not be open entirely to the same level of closeness that an RPG might establish. So it's good to have that baseline.
Rob, what are some things that you make sure are talked about among the group during your session zero?
The biggest thing I try to make sure is the direction that they all want to go as a group. You know, it really just doesn't work, I think, as a fun thing if all I want to do is tell this big epic story with all this political intrigue and, you know, usurping kingdoms, taking down some you know, hidden, what do you want to call it? Like group that's working in the shadows. And, you know, one player loves that. Like, you know, that's everything that they want in an RPG. And then a couple of the others are maybe more into the combat. They're not really the guys that are rolling up social characters or even like doing social checks, even if they make a social character. And then you got maybe a player who's kind of in the middle or not sure. Just kind of get them all talking so that they can all as well get themselves on the same page as where their balance they'd like and what they'd like to see from me. So we can make sure that the story is something that everyone enjoys, as long as they all understand, okay, there's probably going to be sessions where maybe it is combat heavy, but that's not going to be the norm. But then same with maybe a whole session devoted to, okay, you guys are sitting through court drama or going through interrogations, either yourself or doing the interrogating, things like that, where they're not getting to roll certain skills or certain characters aren't going to shine, but that's just that they know that it won't always be their characters don't get the shine, because the story will be this big over arc that will basically be something they're all buying into, because they've all agreed what they want to see and then levels they want to see it.
And if I may add to this, I think it's actually pretty good point, because if you don't share these expectations beforehand, what's gonna happen is that maybe you're gonna have a player which is building a character around something he actually wants pretty much. So let's say you're playing in a modern technologic world where you have vehicles, for example, and you have that player that really wants to pilot, I don't know, airplanes or ships or whatever, and he's gonna make a pilot character with many skills invested in piloting, and in the end maybe there won't be that much vehicle implied inside the adventure unless he actually speaks is need or actually desire to have that kind of session adventure going on.
Yeah, I once ran a D&D game where I was trying to get more political stuff in there because I thought a few of the players wanted more of that. And I got mixed reactions to it. And so I just asked them, hey, what is the kind of game that all of you want to be playing? And they basically had all told me that they wanted a dungeon crawl. And I was like, oh, well, dang, that I'm not going to bother with all the political stuff. Then, but that's hard to write.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of times game masters really like to like make a lot of assumptions about their parties, particularly if they're playing with their friends. Like, oh, yeah, Michael obviously wants to, you know, be a murder hobo in a dungeon. But it always helps to ask, because the answer sometimes might be unexpected.
You know, it's funny you mention that, too, because sometimes people make a character that's different from what they say they're going to make. You
know, yeah.
Yes. To that point, you know, they say, oh, yeah, we want this intrigue, high-flying adventure, but then they make the murder hobo. And from my point of view, it just informs what do they want out of a game, so you can cater to that.
Along those lines, since we're kind of talking about character creation, I think... in terms of what to do at a session zero character creation, provided you've already got everything else agreed upon, such as setting and elements you want to see, having group character creation is, I almost want to say, a must. Because here's the deal with that. If you have the other players contributing ideas that then get used into characters that are not their own, then in a sense, everyone has some investment in everyone else's character, rather than having six people show up with their own personal, you know, wish fulfillment devices and just waiting for their slice of the attention pie. If everyone feels like everyone's character has some sort of, you know, meaning to them, then they're going to be a lot more motivated to make sure the group succeeds rather than their own character. They'll be more likely to have their own character suffer a negative piece of drama if it makes the group more interesting.
I think that discussion of character concepts is important at session zero, but I wouldn't do like all of the number smashing at session zero. I mean, it doesn't really take that long of a time in Genesis specifically, but it does eat up valuable time that could be spent discussing something else. While I do agree that having people discuss their characters and borrow ideas from other players does create a greater sense of like group cohesion and investment.
Yeah, just to continue on, sorry, with what both Zach and Anastasia said, kind of following back to that Star Wars one I mentioned, with our session zero, we had three of us of the four players all had bought in together story-wise. Mine character was ex-military or something, was working as a bounty hunter with one of the other characters, and then the third one had bought in. The fourth guy, he never really got into our group story as why we were together, and it didn't feel like he was as much a part of our story. In character, we didn't necessarily rely on him as much, and out of character, it was kind of it just felt like we didn't really think about him the same. It just kind of helps keep that where you're all invested in what each other's doing, whether it's good or bad, for the moment, or with how the characters interact with each other.
I think situations like that, where you've got most of the characters have weaved their backgrounds together, you have maybe one person who's, you know, they came new into the game, or, you know, they just weren't there for that part of the session zero. For whatever reason, they didn't weave their background in. If you're aware of this, you can play with that dynamic, because it happens in everyday real people social interactions, right? You know, a new person shows up to work, they into your office, they're not really, they haven't been there very long, they're not part of this, the clique of the cool kids in the office, so they get kind of shunned, and maybe they have to work to get into the normal social circle, right? If everyone's aware of that, and you can call on it being a thing, like, hey, you're new to the group, or your background's not integrated, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about how that's going to affect the group dynamic, both with our real personalities, our as players playing these characters, and in the game. So how is that going to affect how these characters interact with each other? So we can play with that, and maybe, you know, we'll find ways to bring them in more.
You know, I like that, and I think that there's a good reason to at least just kind of sketch out some of the mechanics of your character without waxing too far into metagaming, just being able to synergize some of your talents with other people. And not, you don't have the classic tropes in Genesis that you might have with other games, where you have a tank and a healer and this, but those are tropes for a reason, and it's good to have some of those roles at least considered.
Yeah, you don't want too much overlap of skill sets, because it's going to make certain people feel not like they are participating or contributing to the story or the group. But sometimes that overlap can actually be helpful to make some synergy between two characters. Together they do this one thing really amazingly, and they're bonded because of that. But if it's like, oh, we're both pilots, like I have one more dot in piloting than you do, so you don't really need to do piloting, dude, right? Like, it's not fun for the person who has one fewer dots in piloting, just because they didn't happen to do that.
In some way, you can, when you're going through your high-level character concept, you can think about it in some of the same ways that your average character optimizer, or min-maxer, as some call it, thinks about adjusting ability scores or characteristic scores. In terms of what kind of activities defines your character, you can think, what do they do really well? What do they do okay? What do they do if they have to? And what is the thing that they should never be allowed?
I like that.
And how can I encourage the characters that should not be allowed to do the thing to do the thing?
That's a good one.
It's always great when you make a combat character do social checks.
Just split the party.
Yeah.
You do more damage that way.
Mm-hmm. Hit him in the dump stat. That's the one of the mantras that goes back to the adversarial relationship. But all stories are based on conflict.
I remember back when I was playing my campaign, gymming my campaign of Star Wars, we had that pilot player that actually bailed out of the game practically mid-session, and we were stuck with the face character, and it was the mechanic, and they had to actually pilot the ship, and none of them had any agility above average or piloting skill ranks. So it was actually kind of funny having those two characters in the cockpit trying to figure out how the hell are we going to pilot our way out of this tricky encounter with TIE fighters going on and all that.
Poorly is the answer.
The best character I've played in any game was a guy with really, really terrible stats who was forced to pilot a spaceship. He ran away from every combat. It was great.
I actually played a very good pilot, but the narrative dice being what they were and my luck combined with that meant that I was constantly crashing into things and having all manner of problems that you wouldn't suspect you would have with well, let's just call it a min-maxed character.
Yeah. It's not my fault. It's not my fault.
He's got five dice. He shouldn't be
doing
that.
It's the dice.
The dice really are. I had, when I was running my Cowboys and Cthulhu's game, one character decided to be melee out of a whole group of people with guns. He ran into melee a lot. He took a lot of shots to the back.
And he kept doing it?
And he kept doing it.
Amazing.
That's a great thing to talk about in your session zero. It's like, I'm going to be a melee character. How do we make this work? Because I feel like if there's a group of people, let's say the six of us, like, hey, we're going to go fight people all the time. It's just what we're going to do. We're going to break into places and steal stuff, maybe kill some folks, right? We're going to probably run through some drills every once in a while about how that's going to go down. So let's at least have a conversation about what happens when maybe start shedding some blood, right? If everyone has a gun and I've just got this knife, we probably would have talked about that before things went really sideways.
In some ways, you can make entire adventures out of what happens when everything went wrong. I mean, that's literally the plot of Reservoir Dogs.
Anastasia, what are some things that you make sure are definitely talked about in your session zero?
Boundaries. So a lot of games that I've run, a lot of the games that I like to run, tend to be kind of heavy on the horror element. And there are some things some people might not be okay with openly discussing or role-playing at the table. So some subjects might be too heavy, some might just be too uncomfortable. So I like to be on the same page with my players about what's okay and what's not okay and what safety tools are we going to use. So you can use the X card, you know, having a token that just basically changes the discussion to a different subject when like something that's particularly terrible is brought up, something that the players are uncomfortable with are brought up, or just lines and veils, like setting up limits. Like what matter of terrible things happen on screen and what matter of terrible things happen in the game world but are never brought up at the table.
Right. I think this is one of the more important things, and it's becoming more common as the hobby expands into more and more demographics that we know about, really. People of all types of every walk of life have been playing these games the whole time that the games have existed. All the different people have been playing these games, but it's been mainly vocally white males. But the hobby is expanding to be more visibly available to different types of people, and this is amazing, and it's great for the hobby. it's great for everyone else that's in the hobby. The more diversity that we have, it makes us all better. When we have all these different types of people, you don't know what are the things that are really upsetting to some people. There's a lot of things that are used in games that are not comfortable, flippant topics for everyone else. We all have these experiences that are unique to us. We have a lot of shared experience, but there's a lot of things that are pretty unique to us in a lot of ways. Usually these are traumas that have occurred to us. And having those kinds of things appear in a game makes a lot of people very uncomfortable.
I think that one of the most important things about Session Zero is like establishing that communicative environment and establishing that everyone is okay with saying that something makes them uncomfortable, and establishing an understanding that, you know, it's like my job as a GM is to listen to my players when something that they bring up, when something that I bring up or another player brings up is like touches a nerve or, you know, it's just something that they're uncomfortable with. And it's important that other players understand too, that like, you know, when somebody says, no, like that is not okay, they should respond in a way that's positive instead of like making people push their limits.
Yeah. In a session zero, if you're talking about these are plot devices, these are situations that we agree will never be used as part of our story, and you have someone that brings it up, and then someone else just flat out says, I don't respect that, or I think that's silly. That session zero is your moment to say, if this isn't going to work out, feel free to bow out. No offense, no questions asked. You know, just basically, rather than commit to something that you later feel that someone's going to feel nervous about extricating themselves from because they don't want to disrupt the group, but they're privately suffering over. One thing I was going to say was one person's fantasy could be someone else's Friday night. And not that you have to go into any detail of into people's personal lives, but if you discuss these topics in a very, very vague sense, and if everyone says yes, then yes, you can do that. If everyone's like, it can happen, but don't talk about it in detail at the table. That's a thing too. And then there's things that you simply say, there's no reason we do not want this in our story. And then that's the end of it. And if everyone agrees, then you move on. If everyone doesn't agree, then you talk that out and you decide if the person who disagrees, you know, really is going to be a good fit.
You know, you make a good point there with talking about things we do want in a story. A lot of people use this as a form of therapy to work through things, and not that everyone wants to necessarily participate in that, but there are groups that can do that. And I think if you bring forward those things that you do want to bring into a game, not just what's off limits, but what sort of topics do you feel like might make other people uncomfortable that you do want to bring into a game? I think that's an important piece to discuss as well.
Absolutely.
I want to clarify something there that Zach said. When there's someone who is not respecting someone else's boundaries, that's the person that has to go, not the person whose boundaries are not being respected.
Oh, agreed. Agreed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and occasionally that'll fall with the majority and sometimes in the minority. And, you know, and in the end, you know, you group with the group that, you play with the group that is all in agreement, but hopefully with the hobby changing as it is, everyone should be able to find a group that is respectful of their boundaries. In some sense, as it pertains to Genesis, the opportunity for this is a lot greater because all we've known for about 20 years in terms of the hobby are game systems that are framed around combat progression. it's only in the last 10 years that we've seen role-playing games where combat was not the focus. You know, that leveling did not mean, oh, I do more damage or that hit, or I get new ways to hurt people.
Yeah. In Genesis, when you level up, you get more ways to, like, insult people and dodge bullets.
Yeah. Well, that goes back to one of the things that I like to say is follow the Wild Stallions rules. You know, be excellent to each other. And that's mm-hmm. something that I think should be established in the initial phases of Session Zero, too. If you can't get along, you're not going to have a good game.
Mm-hmm. It's best to find that out early, then find out later and have to potentially break up a group over it.
Another thing I think is important is managing expectations. Surge in popularity that actual play shows have been getting. I've had to explain to my player groups that this is not Critical Role, that none of us are professional voice actors or comedians.
Not everyone could be Matt Mercer. Matt Mercer could be Matt Mercer.
Yeah. Because because those shows are great in that they draw more people into the hobby and that they really kind of expand on the opportunity for narrative in role-playing games, especially in like those combat-heavy D20 systems. But they also kind of give a lot of people, especially like newbie players who have been introduced to the hobby through live plays, false expectations of what a game actually is.
I mean, it's no different than someone in the stands watching a baseball game going, you know, I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
No, you probably can't. You can play baseball, but it will be the kind of baseball that you and your friends can play.
All right, Guillaume, you're up. What are some things you want to make sure definitely talked about in your Session Zero?
Actually, it's going to be character's death. I mean, like, sometimes, well, of course, Genesis is not the system which is the more lethal for characters, because dying is actually some kind of accomplishment, since you have to roll pretty high on the critical injury, but still, it can happen, and it happened in the past in other games, and I want to make sure what is the link the players have to their character. What if the character were to die, how are they going to handle it? Because some players are really attached to your character, and even though they know they can get damaged or wounded or something, they don't actually think it's going to go to the point where the character might die. So some players are comfortable with rerolling characters because it's like just new opportunities to play something different that you had in the past. But I think some players are actually so much attached to their characters that should the character die, if they don't feel that they accomplish what they wanted with their characters, they might get upset or something. So I think it's something that should be discussed with the players, how safe you are, how safe your characters are over the course of the adventure. Because you don't want to just kill characters off just like for the fun of it or whatever, but you don't want to piss off players. So if that's supposed to happen, will the player just like start crying or something? So in any case, I think it's a subject to be discussed with the players, just to be sure everyone is on the same page on the topic. Like, can character death may happen? Normally what we have at my table is that if you're doing something stupid, like and the dice are against you, then you're gonna die. Like if you're going back on my D&D days, if you were the wizard and you're going up front in the melee and some bad guy roll a critical against you, well, you're gone, basically. But sometimes it's just like, yeah, it's the tank, he was like buffed and all that to survive all the hits against them, but sadly the dice were keep rolling critical hits and he went down without the healer being able to heal him or whatever. So what's gonna happen in this case? Is the GM expected to like fudge the dice or something, or how the player is gonna handle character's death? So I think it's important to discuss something like this with the players.
Yeah, what I do is I tell my players regarding character death that you guys are fine. I'm not going to create situations which will definitely kill you outright without your input. But if you do something just ridiculously stupid, I will let you die. Death is possible. Be aware of that. And we'll usually color how they go about. They'll act more naturally, like a person would, right? They don't put themselves in unnecessary risk, like a lot of Dungeons and Dragons characters might, right?
If I can add the Genesis angle to that question about player death or character death, not player death.
Jesus,
like, we're not playing for keeps here.
I'm not playing at your table.
It's like, you know, stakes are definitely not that high. But while player, well, sorry, I did it again. While character death is less likely in Genesis compared to, say, Dungeons and Dragons, character debilitation and long healing and recovery time are definitely more likely in Genesis. In a game such as D&D, you can have one hit point left and be completely effective in doing everything that you want. Just don't get hit once, and you're fine. In Genesis, those crits pile up. And even if you're not dead, there will be times at which the character and possibly the player may wish they were. So that's something to also clear with your players, as to say, you know, guys, this is not the kind of game where a good night's rest and you get all your hit points back. It's going to be a while if you don't have medical, you know, skills in your party or medical services in the world to recover your wounds. Yeah, characters should be prepared to not be at 100% most of the game unless they are in a very comfortable environment. And if you want to talk with your players of, do you want your adventure, do you want your campaign to be in a environment where everyone can get everything fixed every adventure, that's perfectly fine to negotiate.
Matt, what do you want to make sure that you talk about during your session zero?
Well, I've heard a lot of good suggestions, things I hadn't considered, a lot that I had. But I think this isn't specific to Genesis, but I think scheduling is always something that needs to be considered, you know, and the logistics about this. When are we playing? Where are we playing? Are we going to eat while we play? Are we going to cook dinner first? Are we going to drink when we play? Or, you know, any of those things. Those tend to kill a group faster than any sort of interplayer reaction, is just not being able to get to the table because everyone's an adult with life and they can't necessarily always find time, even once a month, to sit down for 4 hours with their buddies to play.
We barely got this podcast going.
I mean, we got six here. I mean, that's a full party, isn't it?
That's wild. Yeah. One day, listeners, you may actually hear all of us play a Genesis game for you. But I'm not making any promises.
Mm-hmm. I'm pre-rolling.
Too late. That's written in stone.
I'm marinating myself as we speak.
Contract.
One thing, too, about logistics is I think discussing like what happens in character when a player can't make the session is a good idea.
Mm.
Like, it's especially in terms of XP rewards and stuff like that. Like, inevitably, someone is going to get sick, or someone's kid is going to get sick, or something is going to happen and they're not going to make it. So
yeah, that's a good one. What do you do with that empty seat? Is that character there? Are they not there? Yeah, and XP rewards. I think this came up in Facebook or Discord. One of the forums,
and it was in the forums. It was a very 17-page, hotly debated topic with a lot of emotion.
Yeah, over imaginary.
Points. Over fake points, yeah. Well, I awarded everyone in a thread 1,000 XP just so, you know. I know, even if you're not reading it, just take the XP. It's good.
I mean, I think all of the podcasts active at the time had something to say about that thread.
The way I do it is I don't care, right? So it's easier to have everyone be the same number of experience points. Yeah. That way there's no fighting about whatever, but more importantly, your encounter balance is going to be easier to design if everyone's on the same level.
That's the opinion that finally convinced me, because if you sit down to play poker with your buddies, do you set aside a few dollars for them even if they weren't there? Or are you playing video games? Do you set a controller by for them, or do you just play and have a good time and their punishment. Well, I think the problem is that people think that they're being punished by not receiving XP, but I think I'm getting off topic at that point. But talking about it in the beginning.
Yes. Yeah, we were veering off a little bit. We don't want to tell you what to do about that just yet. We'll have a whole XP episode later on, but we just talk about what your feelings are about experience points and how you're going to handle it when someone's not there. So, Zach, what is it that you always make sure that you talk about in your session zero?
I talk about the graphic, how graphic that content can get, and not necessarily about subject matter, but like, for example, when you get into combat, do people you defeat, do they run away? Are they knocked out? Are they lying bleeding on the floor, or are they in chunky bits? You know, we can basically say how gruesome do the tragedies of the game need to get. The other one I like to ask is what kind of moral ambiguity and moral contrast do the players find comfortable exploring? Is this a pulp game where good guys are unerringly good and bad guys are always super evil, kind of like your Indiana Jones adventure? Is it sort of like the traditional D&D alignment grid where basically you have like two axes of self-interest and respect for authority, that sort of thing? Or is it basically 50 Shades of Grey in which everyone has nuanced motivations and a bad person can have good intentions and good people can do bad things if properly coerced? You know, sometimes people don't want to have to face real world moral gray and they just want to for once feel like they're going to be doing good no matter what. And sometimes people want to explore those shades.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that a lot. I do that almost exclusively with every game I run. Where, you know, the bad guy he's not a bad guy, right? He's just doing something that is bad. But maybe he has some other aspect to his personality that isn't bad, right? You know, he runs a puppy shelter, but he is also selling meth. So do I kill this guy or do I not? Like, what am I supposed to do here, right? Well, that's up to you as the player. I've found that some people are really not okay with that ambiguity. It messes with them when they're playing a game.
I think part of the idea of people coming in with expectations of also Shades of Grey versus the idea of just being, a hardcore black and white also kind of harkens back to seeing some of those live plays like Critical Role or, you know, Acquisitions Incorporated and all that sort of thing where they see examples of, but they just get used to a lot of seeing that video games throw it at you, TV throws it at you, and they may not always see the kinds of examples of the shades of gray or the black and white, so that they kind of gravitate to what they already know rather than want to explore the opposite or just relax with the opposite. If it's just black and white, you know, the character doesn't have to think. It's everything's very clear. It's that's right, that's wrong, doesn't matter why. And with the whole Shades Grey, it kind of makes me think of that story that floats around about the necromancer who goes around and he's doing all of his raising the undead and everything for good. You know, he's got them working out in the fields, building up these villages into cities so that people can educate themselves. They can pursue whatever they want. They don't need to worry about food or shelter or all that because these undead zombies, skeletons, whatever, are just their workforce, you know? Like, it's all these cool shades of gray, and then you got the heroes coming along being the big heroes, destroying it all, and they think, oh, we're going to face some big evil lich. He's just an old man on his deathbed, just, you know, beside himself because all his life's work has been destroyed by heroes.
Awesome. All right, I think that wraps up our talk for Session Zero. All right, and now we come to our community spotlight segment, where each episode we're going to talk about an item from the community that someone in the community has produced and has given to us in some fashion. Since this is our first episode, we're going to talk about what the genesis of Genesis is. How did we get Genesis? And what was the thing that sparked this for us? We got Genesis because of Phil Majewski. He was the first one, maybe, at least the best one, to convert the Star Wars Edge of the Empire rule set into a different setting. In his case, he did Fallout, and he called it Edge of the Wasteland. Now, what he did with this is he did all the conversion, all the things necessary to strip away the Star Wars and make it Fallout. For those that don't know, Fallout is a series of video games that take place in a hypothetical nuclear apocalypse, mainly based in America.
Not the 1950s.
Post-Atom Punk.
Atom Punk, yeah, that's a good description of it. I've only played about an hour of all Fallout games collectively, so I'm not really on the setting. But I'm aware of Phil's contribution to us with it. What he did was he ran this at the Gamer Nation Con, which is the D20 radio role-playing game / board game convention that's in Dallas every year. Dallas, Texas, to be more specific. And he ran that there, and Sam Stewart, the RPG manager for Fantasy Flight Games, saw this. He goes, wow, that's really interesting. He took this idea back to his bosses, and a little while later, we got Genesis. So Phil and his Fallout are very important to us for what he has been able to do. So we're going to talk a bit about the eventual revamp that he did for that Fallout setting in Genesis. So he took his work that he did against Edge of the Empire with talent trees and such, and he made it Genesis. No talent trees, lots of good talents, and some other more Genesis-like stuff. So I asked everyone to read through this Fallout document so we can talk about it. And hopefully everyone can bring it up real quick. If those listening along have not seen this, you can find it in Drainsmith's Dispensary of Genesis Dropbox in the community content folder. There's a Fallout GM Phil folder, which has this setting, which looks pretty cool, I think. I really like the way that it's been laid out and the graphics have been done.
Shameless as a man could be.
The sound you hear is Scott patting himself on the back.
Yeah. What we got from Phil is, I think, one of the first full settings that people had a model from, right? They had, okay, we want to introduce the setting. We want any new rules that we need. We're going to show the archetypes and the skills and the talents and all this. And we're laid out in this way. And that's similar to what we got with maybe the Terranoth book, but this is actually out before the Terranoth book. And it's, I mean, Phil does some freelance stuff, so it's not surprising he's got some inside knowledge to some of this.
Yeah, like this launched when Genesis launched, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, he had this like right afterwards, because it was just an easy little few tweaks for him from his Edge of the Empire.
I believe he also got the book in advance.
He probably got the book in advance. I'm going to guess, because his name is in it, I'm going to guess that he maybe did a little bit of playtesting as well.
Just a bit.
Let's go around and let's talk about some of the things that hopefully you guys saw in this document that you actually liked, besides the amazing graphic design that was done, because that's not really talking about the setting. That's just something else entirely. It doesn't actually have anything to do with this. We want to talk about the content of it, not how beautiful it is.
This ain't about you.
It's not about me. So let's start with Rob. Talk to me. What is you? You are familiar with Fallout, is that right?
Yeah, I am. It was actually the setting I used to introduce my group to Genesis. Not your version of the document, though, but Phil's original. I think he brought some really neat ideas in. We never got to experience the radiation too much. We just ran kind of a two-shot, so players got to play with ghouls. I threw some power armor in there so they could kind of muck about with it. We didn't delve deep into too much, but because everyone at the table was familiar with Fallout, it was a really great springboard right off the bat when Genesis came out to get my entire group onboarded. Everyone had fun. Everyone came in with their, you know, all their memories of the game. It did feel very close to the feel of the game. Like, he really got the idea behind Fallout into his booklet. And Yeah, I with the NPCs, could have been a few more, but I also could have been less lazy on my prep for a dude shot and made a few more myself. But overall, like, it was very easy to just pick it up and go. It was really easy just to on people onto a system that they'd never even heard before because of having something this familiar like Fallout.
I think that's why we see so many settings that are for established IP and not very many settings that are unique. And I'm hoping that we're going to see more unique settings as the system matures and more people pick it up. It's not really much of a surprise that at the start, it's everyone. We've got all these settings that are for established worlds that people are familiar with, because it is easier to just jump into something you already know.
And I think Fallout in particular is kind of like one of those special cases, because it is an RPG about another RPG. I think that the step beyond that is settings that don't have established games for them. And then beyond that, original settings. And I think we've reached that point, like with Anastasia's and some other people that have come out recently.
Yeah, some other people in this podcast even, maybe.
those other people will have their day, and we'll talk specifically about them ad nauseum. So let's not bring up the Inquisition setting or Something Strange. Both great settings just yet. What did you like about this?
Well, what I like is it really captures the spirit of Fallout. I see some people that aren't familiar with the game will miss this, but actually, if you look, let's say, at the new talents, many of these talents, up to their names, were actually picked up from the original Fallout video game series. If you pick something like Strong Back or Bloody Mist, dates back from the first Fallout game where when you were killing an opponent, it was basically exploding inside a bloody mess. And a few of the talents are getting their origin back into the video game. It's and not just something that fell the way to had for the post-apocalypse setting to work. It really goes back to the game, so which it's really nice. And if you look also at the power armor thing, which is a trademark armor of the Fallout universe, I think it captures well the how powerful these piece of gear are actually. When you first equip your power armor in the video game, you're actually jumping a step in the power curve of the game. Like you're the first time you wear that armor in battle, you feel invulnerable. Like it's really a tough armor, and if you look at the soak values of the of these armors, they're really high, so you're actually really tough to kill. And at the same time, it really brings the, you know, that there's that thing, how do they call it, keep the party hungry. Thing is that those power armors, which is basically what you actually want in the game, when you start playing the video game, you're like, you want that power armor. The first time you see it, like, whether it's the Brotherhood of Steel or the Enclave that are wearing those, you want one of these armor. They look cool. But even after you got one, you still have to power it, so you need these fusion cores to have your armor keep going. And when you roll for a despair on any check while wearing a power armor, that despair may be spent to have the fusion core run dry at the end of the encounter. So that basically means that even when you have the top gear of what you can expect from the Fallout setting, you're still going to have to continue dig up more resources to afford these fusion cores, because once you get your power armor on, you don't want to go back to your leather armor or whatever you were using before. So I think it's actually really great. It captures the essence of the video game. So those two things are things that they are pretty great.
I do like that mechanic with the fusion cores and the power armor, that like with running out of ammo, result is like in the middle of that encounter and it messes you up. But fusion core to the end of the encounter. So you're still usable and you're still effective in this encounter, but at the end we're gonna have to get some stuff figured out. And that I think that's great, because I feel like that takes some of the twiddliness of maybe how someone else may have ported over this particular mechanic. Zach, what is it that you liked about the Fallout book here?
In one word, chems. The Fallout universe is one of the few RPGs of to date, both in the original and in this tabletop form, that did not shy away from the concept of having drugs, especially during a time period in at least American history where drugs were unequivocally the enemy of good, decent people. So very few role-playing games even ventured into that territory, or if they did, it was in the sense that they were potions. And no one really discussed what happens if you drink too many potions. Fallout always had that underlying thing of, well, we got all these things you can take that make your stats super good for a short amount of time, but there are definitely drawbacks if you overdo it. And one of the things that Phil's conversion did was show off how various temporary boosting effects can be done in the Genesis mechanics. Basically getting extra soak or getting extra boost die to certain checks and things like that. And then also dealing with the actual withdrawal mechanics and the addiction mechanics that come from the original Fallout game. And I think just having that document is a great jumping off point for creating those kinds of substances in your other games, like in your Cyberpunk games with Android. There's a couple of drugs in there too, but again, that document opened the door for, here's how you can make potions in the Genesis system.
Yeah, I like his addiction mechanic here. It's actually a little more complicated than what we find in the Android book, and I think in a better way. The Android mechanic for addiction is a little too simple for me. Really might just depend on the kind of game that you want to do. If you're going to really kind of focus on addiction, like chems do in Fallout, then you're going to want these more complicated addiction rules. But if it's not really, you know, it's one of those subjects you don't really want in your game, then maybe hand wave it with the simple version in Android, or don't do it at all. Anastasia.
Yeah.
You have feelings about this Fallout book?
I love the radiation rules. I think they're just so cool. One thing, if you look at the main Genesis book, as well as both Android and Terranoth kind of glaze over, is like environmental hazards. And the radiation rules in the supplement are just really nice and really meaty and kind of bring back that, you know, that sort of like old school D&D feel where you try to like deplete the player's resources and like actively put them in danger through like environmental hazards. So I just really, really love them. If I ever run a Fallout game, it's going to be radioactive as hell.
I think these rules can be easily brought over into any other kind of thing. Like, You can use something very similar to this on like a desert setting where they're just slowly kind of losing all their water, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like the exhaustion rule from 5th Ed.
It is a bit like that, like where, you know, first level of exhaustion is not terrible, but then you just start gradually suffering more.
Matt, give me your thoughts and feelings on Fallout Document.
You know, I'm not at all familiar with the game. I know that's probably comes as a surprise that I've been living under a rock and didn't really know anything about it. But looking over the document, I was particularly fond of the fact that I can take a 32-page document and read it in, you know, under an hour and be ready to run a game since I already am armed with the knowledge of the rules of Genesis. There's not that much that he really had to throw in there. A few flavor things, you know, like you've called out the chems, the rads. A few new adversaries, a few new talents, but for the most part, it's not an entirely new game. It's a small, digestible chunk that you can sit down with your group, and others have mentioned that that was their gateway into Genesis, and I think that that's awesome.
Yeah, it is. Does sit at that really, really sweet spot of like chunky, but still very digestible, very easy to read. I feel like it could benefit from maybe like two or three pages denoting just locations like New Reno or any of the other sort of big city type settlements. Just to provide a little bit more background.
Yeah, that's one of the balancing acts to do with one of these settings based on an existing IP is how much detail you're going to go in there and how much detail you need to go in there. I think the assumption is a lot of people that are going to be playing this are already familiar. That's why they're picking it up. But then we still have some of this stuff that can onboard people that haven't read any of it before. So this is more player-focused rather than GM-focused.
Yeah. some people do. I mean, I've read Genesis settings for things that I've never played in my life, like Overwatch, for instance, which I know is wild. I feel like the people who read like settings based on existing IPs and who are not familiar with the original IP are in the minority. But I feel like it's a minority that sometimes should be addressed.
That being said, I cannot wait to run a New Vegas campaign in that system.
Oh, hell yeah. Cowboy hell.
Okay, that was our first episode. I hope everyone enjoyed that. Did you guys all have fun?
Yeah. Yep.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. I think we did pretty well. We're going to play with our format a little bit, but I think we got it. So thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Don't Despair is a member of the D20 Radio family of podcasts. Don't Despair is a podcast created by fans and is not affiliated with Fantasy Flight Games. The views and opinions expressed are that of their author and not of Fantasy Flight Games. Genesis and all related trademarks are owned by Fantasy Flight Games. The content of this podcast is owned by Don't Despair and is provided for entertainment purposes only. Don't Despair accepts no responsibility for any injury, dismemberment, or death resulting from the use of the information contained herein. Consult the doctor if fun lasts for more than 4 hours. The Don't Despair podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License.